Good morning. The first case on the docket this morning is the United States v. Rosario. Are the parties ready? Okay, we'll hear first from the appellant.
Chief Judge Rodman and members of the court, good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Lieutenant Doug Ottenwess, and I represent Sergeant Rosario. Chief Judge Rodman, with the court's permission, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Thank you, Your Honor. The NMCCA wrongfully bolstered an otherwise factually and legally insufficient sexual harassment charge by relying on allegations of which Sergeant Rosario was acquitted. Now, Sergeant Rosario is not seeking to expand or change any rules regarding an appellate court's power to review inconsistent verdicts or lesser-included offenses. He's merely seeking to enforce already existing double jeopardy protections.
Well, is this an inconsistent verdict?
Absolutely not, Your Honor.
No. You got two things. You got the stuff of which he was acquitted.
Correct, Your Honor.
Which included touching. And you've got the thing of which he was convicted, which included what?
Well, that's kind of the mystery in this case, Your Honor. We don't actually know. The charge was drafted in such that it could have included physical elements. It could have,
or it could not have.
Or it could have included verbal elements. Correct, Your Honor. And that's why, in this case, we don't believe that an inconsistent verdict analysis is appropriate for this court, because we don't have an inconsistent verdict in this case.
What were the arguments? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. What do we have?
What we have here is an unambiguous acquittal, and that's accompanied by an ambiguous conviction, I would say.
Well, or don't you have a pair of ambiguous verdicts?
Well, we certainly have an unambiguous acquittal, I would say. That's the members came back and said not guilty to the 120 and the 120.
Well, and you've got an unambiguous conviction in that he was convicted of something.
Well, we have a general verdict in this case, in that the members believed he was guilty.
It's usually a general verdict.
Correct, Your Honor. But based on the charging in this case, and in particular the lack of specificity in the specification, we can't know for certain whether the members relied on the physical contact, the verbal statements, or both.
Well, is the gravamen the conduct, or is the gravamen notice?
In this case, it's solely what the Court of Appeals did with the findings that were brought to them, Your Honor. So it's not so much a notice issue. We believe that the appellant was properly on notice at trial. What we're specifically contesting in this case is the scope of the CCA's Article 66C review, which revived those acquitted facts and relied on them to affirm the Article 92 conviction in this case, Your Honor.
What did the government give as notice for the Article 92 charge? I mean, do we know what that encompassed in their theory?
All we have is the general testimony from the witnesses at trial, and there was certainly testimony that went to statements that Sergeant Rosario made to his Lance Corporal in his command, and there were also allegations of a physical contact that were made against the Lance Corporal in this case. So there was testimony that would have covered both verbal and physical conduct. Based on the charging scene, however, we do not know whether the government went to charge the Article 92 as a solely verbal offense or whether it was meant to cover both types of offenses in this case, Your Honor.
So you're assuming essentially that by charging the specific conduct in the Article 120 charge, they didn't intend to charge that in the Article 92 charge?
Really a guess, Your Honor. We don't actually know for sure, but that ambiguity should be resolved in favor of Sergeant Rosario on appellate review. He had a chance to contest the 120 and the 128 charges at trial. They did so. They were successful ultimately. So it would be improper for the NMCCA to then revive those allegations to affirm his conviction, to essentially give the government a second bite at the apple in this case, Your Honor.
Let me ask you a question.
Yes,
here.
Your Honor.
You're familiar with United States versus Gutierrez?
Yes, I am, Your Honor.
Now, how do you distinguish your case from Gutierrez? In Gutierrez, it was a similar situation, was it not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Where you had the accused acquitted of a rape that was actually factually included within the stalking charge. And I think this court said the members could very well have, you know, acquitted him of the rape and still use the factual determinations as they deliberated on the stalking charge, right?
Correct, Your Honor.
So what's different here about your case?
Well, the Gutierrez case, Your Honor, deals with the members' abilities to reach an inconsistent verdict in this case. And we're not here today to say that Gutierrez is bad law or Dunn and Jackson are bad law in any way. Mm-hmm. But this case is different because it deals with the NMCCA's power to take those acquitted facts and use them in their Article 66C review. Gutierrez dealt with the members' ability to reach an inconsistent verdict, and that's where the distinction lies.
Well, haven't we always given the CCA's very broad ambit in finding something factually and legally sufficient or not?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay, well then, what you're saying is you can do it for members, but you can't do it for the CCA. Don't you have it backwards? Members are far more circumscribed than the CCA is.
Well, Your Honor, we would, I guess from our point of view, is yes, the NMCCA certainly does have broad fact-finding powers. However, those powers are limited by what the members reject on their findings. And here we have a clear rejection of the allegations that went to the article.
Well, but that doesn't really get to what Gutierrez said. You're just saying Gutierrez is different because it was a member's case.
Correct, Your Honor. And that doesn't...
It was a member's case, but... What I'm saying is, how does that make it different?
Well, because it's a member's case, that case doesn't touch on this case here, because Gutierrez did not deal with an appellate court's powers to conduct their Article 66C.
And what I'm saying is that normally we view those as broader than we view the powers of members, which are circumscribed by the judge's instructions and by statute.
Well, we certainly agree that the appellate courts would have broad powers to conduct their Article 66C review. Those powers are limited when the members come back with not guilty findings to certain allegations. The violation occurs once the NMCCA revives those acquitted facts and uses them to affirm the other convictions of which they are reviewing at the appellate level, Your Honor.
So, counsel, in a case like this, how would the CCA know that the panel members didn't acquit because of leniency or compromise or mistake, as we cited 50 years ago, sometimes happens?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, they don't know. And part of the problem with this case is that the NMCCA has essentially taken a fly-on-the-wall in the members' room position to say, you know, we know how the members came to the vote that they did in this case. Now, one of the ways to cure the potential errors in future cases would be better specificity with the actual charge itself. The government could have charged committed sexual harassment by verbal comments to wit, and then said something there by physical comments to wit, or I mean by physical actions to wit. But they didn't do that in this case.
Couldn't the defense counsel have filed for a bill of particulars?
Absolutely, Your Honor. But
well, isn't that on him and not the government? You're saying the government should have been more specific in its drafting of its specification, but if the accused and defense counsel have a problem with it at trial, isn't that what the defense counsel should do?
Well, certainly, Your Honor, the defense could have asked for a bill of particulars, as well as the government could have charged it more clearly, and the judge could have required special findings in this case as well. There are many places for a case like this to fall off the rails in regards to specificity for the appellate courts to conduct their review. We're not saying that the charging scheme is perfect, that the defense may have exercised all the available options to them. What we're saying happened here is that based on the finding sheet that were approved by the CCA that went up to the NMCCA, they could not have known why the members chose to convict him of the Article 92 charge in this case, Your Honor.
Well, counsel, let's assume you're right, and let's assume that the CCA improperly considered the touching charges. Where is their prejudice here? Isn't there plenty of evidence in the record that shows that he was guilty of the verbal harassment?
No, that's not, Your Honor. And part of that comes from the lack of clarity provided in the Marine Corps order covering the sexual harassment policy. The statements that Sergeant Rosario made to Lance Corporal B.A. in this case are very ambiguous as to whether or not they violate the Marine Corps sexual harassment policy. The Marine Corps order itself is very vague in regards to what is and is not sexual harassment. In particular, one of the comments he made, the Marine Corps policy says this may or may not rise to the level of sexual harassment. So even the policy itself, when citing examples, takes a certain comment that he made in this case and goes, we don't know if this is sexual harassment or not. This is kind of a case-by-case analysis.
Well, he was convicted of it. Are you resurrecting the vagueness argument, which was presented below and which, as far as I know, we didn't grant on?
Well, we would ask for, in this case, Your Honor, should this case be sent back to the NMCCA, we would want them to reconsider the vagueness argument. We don't believe that we received proper consideration of the vagueness argument in this case because the NMCCA took those acquitted allegations and revived them and essentially said, well, based on all the physical and the verbal comments, there's no way he could have been not aware that his actions
violated the regulation.
Correct, Your Honor. So we believe with the NMCCA limiting their scope of review to just the verbal comments, we believe that we would get a proper analysis of the vagueness argument in this case, Your Honor.
So you're drawing a distinction between the vagueness argument and notice requirement?
Correct, Your Honor. So we raised three assignments of error at the intermediate court. We raised a factual deficiency, vagueness of the policy, and then a sentence appropriateness argument. The NMCCA took the acquitted allegations, though, and used them in all three of those analyses to ultimately say that it was factually sufficient, the policy is not vague, and the sentence was appropriate. And that's where I believe the tainted analysis comes into play, because they're pulling in these allegations that the members said, we believe he's not guilty of, Your Honor.
Counsel, on page 12 of your brief, you cite Smith for the proposition that the appellate review process should not prejudice an accused. But where here did the appellant end up with a more serious conviction or more severe punishment than was imposed at the trial level?
Well, it's not that he ended up with a more serious punishment or was convicted of a more serious offense, Your Honor. It's that he wasn't given a fair Article 66C review. The members acquitted him of the three specifications in this case, and the government got to use those specifications as a second bite at the apple here. So he didn't get the fair Article 66C review that similarly positioned appellants would get in their appellate review, Your Honor. And I think the Air Force Court in Hernandez demonstrated the correct way to do Article 66C review when you have a mixture of acquittals and convictions here. In that case, the appellant was convicted of indecent liberties with a minor for kissing a 15-year-old on the mouth, but was acquitted of rape by digital penetration and abusive sexual contact by engaging in oral sodomy. Now, the Air Force Court of Criminal Appeals said, we are mindful that we may not make findings of fact contrary to not guilty findings, and they limited their review to exclude the actions of which the appellant was acquitted. Now, ultimately, they affirmed in that case, but they took very great care to place those acquitted allegations in a box that they did not consider when conducting their Article 66C review. We asked the NMCCA to do the same thing for Sergeant Rosario's case, and we believe that remanding this case to them for proper Article 66C review is the way to allow for that to happen.
Lieutenant Ottenwiss?
Yes, sir.
Is that how you say that? Again, I want to go back to this notion I'm kind of stuck on, I apologize, but about your view that the CCA was resurrecting these acquitted facts. And in Gutierrez, I was just looking at it again very quickly. We were doing a legal sufficiency review in Gutierrez, were we not?
Yes, Your Honor.
And I think in Gutierrez, we actually mentioned and considered the factual circumstances surrounding the rape that the accused had been acquitted of in supporting a legal sufficiency analysis of the stalking. I mean, am I reading Gutierrez incorrectly? I admit I wasn't here when it was decided, but could you help me out here?
Well, Your Honor, what While the court was conducting a legal sufficiency review in that case, the case still focuses on the member's powers to render an inconsistent verdict. And certainly Goodyear does not touch on an intermediate appellate court's factual deficiency powers. So that's where we believe the double
jeopardy. Right. That goes back to my other question then, and I think maybe someone else asked it on the panel here, and that is, if the members could do this, then why can't the CCA do it in their factual sufficiency mode?
Well, the
in their factual sufficiency mode, they're purportedly, to use a loose phraseology here, acting as the 13th juror, so to speak. Are they not?
Well, Your Honor, they're coming in at a step that's two or three steps past where the members are voting. So the members are in the deliberation room, and they're coming up with their verdict. There is no double jeopardy implications you get in play. There's still the first jeopardy, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
But it's when we get to that Article 66C second step that we have the certain set of facts that resulted in acquittals. So that's where the double jeopardy concerns come into play. So the members aren't bound by facts that they can exclude and consider the way that the appellate courts would be, who have to operate on what the members chose to accept and reject before it gets to that level, Your Honor.
What about the old Supreme Court decision in Dunn?
Dunn, Your Honor.
X in res judicata for Y.
Well, again,
I mean, that's a situation, of course, where you know what they're doing. Here, it's not even that clear. They may not have relied on it at all. But Dunn seems to say it doesn't matter.
Correct, Your Honor. But Dunn, just like Jackson and just like Gutierrez, deals with the members' powers to render an inconsistent verdict. Dunn does not touch on the appellate court's review authority in regards to factual sufficiency. Excuse me. So
nor would it, since the courts then didn't have that power.
Well, certainly, Your Honor, and that's why I believe it's not necessarily the most helpful case to demonstrate the problems that exist in this current case, Your Honor. I see that I'm out of time, so I will reserve my time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. We'll now hear from the government.
Good morning, Chief Judge Erdman, and may it please the court. My name is Lieutenant Robert Miller, and along with Mr. Brian Keller, I represent the United States. This case is not about double jeopardy. It's not about issue preclusion or ambiguous finding. It's not even about inconsistent verdicts. But to the extent it is, we still win. What this case is about is a new rule that appellant's asking this court to adopt, expanding Smith to apply to separate and distinct charges and specifications. This court should clearly reject that rule, and it should hold, first, that military appellate courts can review even apparently inconsistent verdicts, just as military trial courts can issue them, and second, where evidence is relevant to more than one offense and there's mixed findings, military appellate courts can affirm on the basis of that relevant evidence, even though it also went to an acquitted offense. I'm going to talk about three things: Smith, Gutierrez, and then some of the consequences of appellant's argument. First, yes.
From the specification, counsel, that the physical acts were included within that specification?
We can tell from the specification because it included the instruction which defines sexual harassment as both physical and verbal conduct of a sexual nature when it's unwanted in the workplace.
We did have evidence of verbal harassment, correct?
Yes, there was evidence of verbal harassment as well as physical harassment.
So why is it that we should assume that the charge included the physical harassment when they acquitted him of the offenses related to the physical acts?
Because in order to assume that, there's a premise, which is that the acquittal of the 120 and the 128s included an acquittal of all elements of the offense. In other words, that these two mixed findings can't rationally be reconciled, which is what an inconsistent verdict means under Powell and Dunn. But there's additional elements in the 120 and the 128, so you can't make that assumption. And this court, and no court has ever said that an acquittal means an acquittal, a general verdict of acquittal means an acquittal of all elements of the offense. So here we can't even get to inconsistency, even though that's a premise of appellant's argument. And Smith, in appellant's reply brief, he goes all in on Smith, says this is the case that helps him win. But Smith was a specification of guilt before the CCA, which included within it findings, specific findings of not guilty through exceptions. And what this court said was that in those circumstances, the CCA may not find as fact allegations in that specification which the fact finder found the accused not guilty. But here we have a general verdict of guilt before the members with no exceptions, no findings of not guilty by exceptions. And so the general verdict rule applies. Rodriguez, Pielonik, that verdict of guilt attaches to all acts within the specification.
So, Lieutenant, well, you're Miller, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. You're striking a difference between Smith and Rodriguez and Gutierrez by saying that in Smith there were acquittals of specific factual allegations, and in Gutierrez there was a acquittal of an offense for which there are specific elements involved. And that, and the distinction being in Gutierrez, we don't know what the members could have acquitted him on within those various elements. But in Smith, we know exactly what single specification, I mean, what single factual allegation was being found not guilty of.
That's
is that
one,
kind of the distinction you're making?
That's one of the distinctions I'm making, Your Honor.
All right.
A different distinction is that in Gutierrez, those findings of not guilt of the rape, those aren't even before the CCA, and they're not before this court. The only findings before this court in Gutierrez are the general verdicts of guilt to, in that case, stalking, and in this case, the Article 92. The problem in Smith is unique. It's exception to the general verdict rule, where you have the specification itself with specific criminal misconduct accepted. And the problem that the lower court ran into in Smith was that once you accepted the not guilty finding for that criminal misconduct, there was nothing left on which to affirm. So the error that the CCA made was finding him guilty of the exact criminal misconduct that the members found him not guilty of. And so it's a unique case. It's an outlier. But, again, you can't get to this is Gutierrez, Your Honor. This is where the court said the panel can independently consider the evidence supporting the rape charge of which Gutierrez was acquitted while deliberating on the stalking charge. And Judge Sparks, just as you said, what was implicit in that is that military appellate courts can affirm on the basis of that evidence, even though that relevant evidence also went towards one of the offenses that was acquitted.
What do you? How do you respond to counsel's argument that, well, the members could do it, but the CCA in its fact-finding powers or fact-finding mode could not do that?
Well, that would be kind of a weird system if you could have mixed findings at the trial level, but necessarily each time it got up to a military appellate court on appeal, those findings would have to be set aside. Take, for example, an Article 120 charge and an adultery charge, a common fact pattern in the military. Anytime there's an acquittal on that 120 charge, you can have those, and a conviction on the adultery, you can have those mixed findings. But as soon as you get to the CCA, they have to set aside the adultery because the acquittal on the 120 meant that they didn't have sex. Or drunk driving and vehicular manslaughter. If you have mixed findings at trial level, then once it gets up to the CCA, you have to set it all aside because the accused wasn't driving. So you
Counsel,
get.
I think that your argument would be a lot more persuasive if the specification distinguished between the physical and if the specification made clear that involved both the physical acts and the verbal acts.
Well,
because you'd like us to say, well, you can't do it element by element, but if you have two different sorts of harassment, physical harassment and verbal harassment, right, and if you accept out the physical acts and charge them separately, and they're found not guilty of that, it's hard to see why this is Gutierrez.
Again, you can only get to there being an inconsistency if you assume that the acquittal is an acquittal of all elements of the offense.
I'm not talking about an inconsistency. I'm talking about a 66C review that appears to potentially have relied on facts of which he was acquitted, which is different than an inconsistent verdict.
Well, this would be an apparently inconsistent verdict, which is what Gutierrez is. There's no fatal inconsistency in Gutierrez because the acquitted offense of rape did contain additional elements.
So. Well, it's not apparent at all. We don't know.
It could have been inconsistent, or it could not have been, because of the way it's charged. It's just a black box that we can't look into. So now what are we supposed to do with all this?
I think this court in Rodriguez and Pielonik, although those cases didn't address sexual harassment, but that it's instructive, which is that when you have an on diverse occasions specifications, the government isn't required
to... You're not suggesting this is Walters, are you?
No, not at all, Your Honor. Okay. What I'm suggesting is that this is Pielonik and Rodriguez to the extent that the specification itself doesn't lay out every act that the government's going to prove up. But in Rodriguez, in Pielonik, this court said that's okay, and if there's a general verdict, then the presumption is that the finding of guilt attaches to each of those acts that the government goes and proves up.
Slightly different but related question. Let's say that the specification, instead of saying what it says now, specifically said by verbally harassing. Okay, so it said verbally harassed these people.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the CCA did what it did in this case. Well, talked about the physical acts.
The reason that wouldn't be allowed is because that evidence wasn't relevant to the specification, not because of the acquittals. So the physical acts, if somebody's charged with verbal harassment and convicted of verbal harassment, those physical acts can't come in because of MRE 401 and 402, not because of some other acquittal that those acts went toward. And that's consistent with what this court said long ago in Hicks, which is you don't look at the acquittals, you look at whether the evidence is relevant to the convicted offense. The lone exception being Smith, where you have a specification with not guilty findings within that specification.
Counsel, is there sufficient evidence of the verbal conduct to affirm the conviction without the physical conduct?
Yes, there is, Your Honor.
So why don't we just do that? That would seem to answer your question. Or can we do that?
I think based on the lower court's opinion, that would be the result if this was sent back, no doubt, that the lower court would affirm factual sufficiency and legal sufficiency based on the verbal conduct. But the issue of factual sufficiency was raised below, and this court can't affirm that factual sufficiency. I know that's not a satisfying answer, but I think it would be hard for this court to simply say, well, I'm sure the lower court would have found those verbal instances to be factually sufficient.
Senator, can I ask you a question finally?
Yes, sir.
At trial, the theory of the prosecution presented to the members, did it include that the victim had been harassed by verbal methods and by physical contact?
Yes, thank you, Judge Sparks. And this was.
Oh, don't thank me.
This is also the second part of the answer I wanted to give to Judge Ryan, which was at trial, both the opening statement, the way that the victim's testimony was presented, the closing argument, these were all very clearly geared toward the sexual harassment being both verbal and physical. We don't have the full opening statement in the joint appendix, but on page 143 of the joint appendix, you'll see an excerpt of the closing argument where trial counsel is very clearly arguing that the sexual harassment was of both a verbal and physical nature, and that he's talking about the specific verbal comments, then the kissing on the cheek. And this is how it was presented at trial, and yet there was no objection for lack of notice of what appellant was being prosecuted for. There was no request for a bill of particulars. So at trial, it's very clear that this is a case about verbal and sexual harassment as well as these more serious offenses. And so, in conclude, barring any further questions, we'll briefly conclude. This court should reject appellant's argument to expand Smith to apply to separate and distinct charges and specifications. Instead, this court should clearly hold that first, the Smith rule never crosses over to other offenses. Second, that military appellate courts can review even apparently inconsistent verdicts just as military trial courts can issue them. And third, where evidence is relevant to more than one offense and there's mixed findings, military appellate courts can affirm on the basis of that relevant evidence, even if it also went to an acquitted offense. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Rebuttal?
Piggybacking off that last point, while the trial counsel may have argued at trial that it was both the physical allegations and the verbal comments that rose to the level of sexual harassment, but doesn't cure the problem of we don't know why the members chose to vote the way they did. And the violation in this case comes from when the NMCCA tries to take the position of being able to know why the members voted the way that they did. That's where the double jeopardy concerns come into play. We have specifications and charges that resulted in acquittals, and those are being revived to affirm the 92 charge in this case, which could have multiple bases for why the members voted the way that they did.
But you're saying because we cannot know what the members acquitted him on, what specifically, that therefore the CCA should not be able to use the factual allegations contained in the specifications that he was acquitted of. Is that
correct,
what
you're
saying?
Correct, Your Honor. So it's the combination of the unambiguous acquittal and the ambiguous conviction that leads to the tension here in this case that the government argues against, but it's that we have a clear set of facts that should not be considered based on the way that the Article 6060 interplays with the Fifth Amendment, Your Honor.
Now, is this problem created because our system has this intermediate appellate court that has this particular power?
Yes, Your Honor. This is a uniquely military problem that we frankly would not see in the civilian criminal appellate courts, Your Honor. Yes. If there are no further questions, that concludes my argument.
Okay. The court thanks counsel for both parties. The case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until 10:10.
All rise. Court stands in recess until 10:10.